Hi everybody, we're going to get started. Today we're going to talk about the halting problem for a while, and then we're going to start talking about a new subject, which is compression, how to keep the data small. And so we're going to start with the halting problem. We started talking last time about these kinds of loops. I said that, you know, this is a kind of loop where, so it's a repeat until loop, and we can write it in three different ways. This one uses a repeat until. So this says sets I to 10, and it repeats until I is equal to 0, pops, and then changes I by minus 1. And so this is gonna, we decided that this is going to pop 10 times, and after 10 times, I is going to be 0, and it's going to stop. This is the same thing written with just a repeat loop. So we don't have a repeat until, we have a repeat loop. And it just sets I to 10, repeats I, which, you know, here it replaces I with 10 because I is 10. And then, so repeats 10 times, pops, and then changes I by minus 1. And this one, well actually, this one, I want to go back to this one. So I is 10 in the beginning, repeats 10 times, pops 10 times, and changes I by minus 1. And then it's going to make I 9, repeats it 9 times, pops, so it pops 10 times, then it pops 9 times, then it pops 8 times. Until it reaches I zero, and then it's going to say repeat zero, and it's going to stop. This one is kind of doing the same kind of thing, but it uses a forever loop, and if I is smaller than one, it stops the script. And so the way this one stops is that whatever, you know, it goes into this, so it stays in this loop, and if I becomes smaller than one, it stops. If I is bigger than one, it will play the sound pop, and then it will change I by minus 1. And so no matter what happens, it will decrease the I by minus 1 by 1, and it will eventually reach 1 or 0, and when it's smaller than 1, it will stop the script. What are some values? Let's take this script. Is there any value, initial value for I, that will make this not stop? It will pop forever. Can you think of anything? What's that? Infinity, yeah. That's just a smaller, yeah, go ahead. Any negative number. So what happens if there's a negative number, so let's say minus 1, it repeats until I equals 0, so I is not 0. It pops, and then it changes I by minus 1, it makes it minus 2, and so on. And it will never reach the termination condition. So for any negative number, any other numbers? Yeah.
Anything that's not a whole number.
Anything that's not a whole number. So, for example, 1.5, right? If it's 1.5, it makes it, it's not equal to 0, it makes it 0.5. Then it's not equal to 0, it makes it minus 0.5, and so on. It's never going to reach 0. So, yeah. Okay, great. So these are, we can, these are some kind of loops that we can kind of look at them and figure out, will they stop at some point, or will they not stop? And we watched a video at the end of class last time, and it kind of talks about the halting problem. It's actually, let's see, let's go back. So it talks about, you know, it makes an analogy between the halting problem and the question of if somebody will drink their drink with salt. And so, you know, if somebody comes to me and says I can predict that, I can say, well, what are you going to say about me? Am I going to have my drink with salt or not? If they say yes, I will have my drink without salt. If they say no, I'll have my drink with salt and prove them wrong. And so it's the same kind of thinking and rationalizing, thinking about it as the halting problem. But we also talked last time about contradictions and oxymorons and stuff like that. And I just want to point out some of the contradiction in the Answer Man video, just in case you go back and listen to it. He says, it's hour past when I guess it is. So that's kind of a contradictory, it's kind of contradictory because I would probably, how do I, so I'm guessing it's hours past than I guess the actual time is. So why don't I just guess what the actual time is? I'll make an attempt not to try. I'm already making an attempt. So that doesn't make sense. He sells me my drinks for free. People sometimes say that. There's a guy there, penal polyglot pantomime is silent in 12 different tongues. Traditional modernist, I won't speak to you. This statement I'm making is untrue. If the statement is true, it's actually not true, because it says the statement is untrue. If it's untrue, it's actually true. Newly avowed bachelor. There's a few more, but I just selected a few. And so we talked about those kinds of contradictions, which, you know, people use in day-to-day life, and they're not, some of them are not very deep. Some of them are deeper, though. This one is pretty deep. This one, you can't make this work. And so here's a clicker question for you. One of them, there's only one statement that is true. And please click which one it is. So, which one is true? So there's only one that's true. Okay? Which one is true? So A says B is wrong. B says this is the right answer. C says none of the choices is correct. D says A is the right answer. And E says this is the right answer. So one of them, there's only one that is correct. There's only one that is true. And you have to figure out which one it is. Okay, so C is not correct. Right? Because it says none of the choices is correct. So C is not the answer. One that is correct. All the other ones are wrong. I'm going to stop at 2. Above, but well, okay, let's see. B says A is the right answer, and so that means if D is right, that means that there's two right answers, and so D is definitely wrong. A then is definitely wrong too, because D is wrong. D is false. So D says A is the right answer, so A is the right answer, and A says A is wrong. So B says B is wrong. And so, then B is right, basically. Okay? So, could everybody follow me? Okay, no. All right. So, let's start with B. B says A is the right answer. And if A is the right answer, so if B is right, then that means that A is right. And there's two right answers. But there's just one right answer. So, that means that D is wrong. Okay? Because if A, B is right, then A is right. Right? Well, B says A is the right answer. Okay? And so we can't have two right answers. So B is wrong, then A says, so that means that B says A is the right answer, that means that A is the wrong answer. And so A is false. So A says B is wrong, and so B is the right answer.
But you said B would also count?
What's that?
Which one would E?
Well, the E is not right because B is right, and there's only one right.
But E could be right.
Right.
There's nothing contradicting.
Yeah, but I said that there's only one right answer. Well, what's wrong about it is that there's one right answer, which is B. Because, well, if E is right, then B is wrong, and this whole thing falls apart. You need, like, four to be wrong and one to be right.
But what if you noticed that E was right first? Like, isn't it, like, kind of, like, if one's right, the other one's wrong? But if, you know, so yeah. If you see that E is right first, then you would say B is wrong.
Right, right.
But the name.
It's because of the constraint that I put. Go ahead.
I think I can explain why E is
right. Okay, go ahead.
It says if that is right, then answer A would be true. Which would mean that's true.
Yeah.
Because then B would be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, and it's the same kind of idea, right? You can have two right answers. So, you know, what they were saying was that, well, E can be right and B can be right too. But right, if E is right, then that contradicts, that makes this whole thing fall apart. Okay?
So the right answer was what?
The right answer was B. I think this question is about making a whole system of sentences work together. This one is, again, about growth. So this is what we're doing. We have a city, we have Manhattan, for example, and we have avenues and streets, and this is how we walk through the city. So the number of blocks on each side is n. So you have n blocks this way, n blocks this way, and the way we walk is we start in this corner, and we walk up all the way, then we walk one block to the right, then we walk down all the way, then we walk one block to the right, and then we walk up again, and so on, for all the whole length, the whole length of the city, basically. How does this distance grow? And the options are, it grows like big O of log n, B, it's like big O of n, C, it's like big O of n log n, D, it's big O of n squared, and E, it's big O of n 2 to the n. Stop at 1:30. Majority answer was the right answer. So let's see. Let's take some numbers here. Let's take, what if n is 3? How many blocks do I walk? Well, I walk 3 blocks, then I walk 1 block, 4, another 3, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right? 10 blocks. What about if n is 4? I'll go 4 and 5, and I'll do 5 how many times? I'll do 5 4 times, right? So I'll do 4 and 1, 5, then 4 and 1, 5, then 4 and 1, 5, then 4 and 1, 5. So I have, this is basically 3 plus 1 times 3. And this is, which is not 10, it's 12. And this is 4 plus 1 times 4. So basically when I have n, I walk n, then n plus 1, then again n plus 1, and I do this n plus 1 times however many blocks I have on one side. And so I have n times n plus 1, which is n squared plus n, which is big O of n squared. Any questions? Another way to walk. Again, we have n. We have a square side n, and then we walk. We walk like this, basically. So along the diagonal, pretty much. And again, the question is, what is the distance like? Which function? And so we have again the same options. Big O, A is big O of log n, B is big O of n, C is big O of n log n. B is big O of n squared, and E is big O of 2 to the n. And stop at 1. We can think of it as, for each block on this side, you have to walk 2 blocks. So for this block, you have to walk 2 blocks. For this block, you have to walk 2 blocks. For this block, you have to walk 2 blocks. How many blocks do you have? You have n, so 2n. It's basically the number, and that's a big O of n. Okay. The halting problem says that we have some code, and we would like to know if this code stops ever. So eventually, basically. And so what we can do is, we want to build a subroutine, which is called a halt tester, and we want to feed it some kind of code, some kind of scratch code. And we want to know, so what this will do is it will run its code, and at the end it will say this script will eventually stop and will make the answer true. Or this is a script that doesn't stop, and the halt tester is going to be able to say, this script will not stop and make the answer false. So we would like to have this kind of tool, and we said that this is the halting problem basically. So we don't want to loop forever, and so we make this halt tester subroutine, and they have, Alan Turing has proved that this is impossible to do, because say that our little program that we make this program that we're going to feed to the halt tester, and it's called contrary, and it looks at it basically feeds so this program is itself a subroutine that takes another program as input, and it just feeds itself as input, and it says, okay, I'm going to run the halt tester on me, and I'm going to say what the halt tester says. And if the answer is 1, so if the answer is true, so if the halt tester says I'm going to stop, I'm going to go into a forever loop, and I'm not going to stop. If the halt tester says, if the answer is 0, if the halt tester gives me any other answer, I will stop. And so basically this says, I can always, it's like the answer man, asking, I can tell you about anybody if they're going to have salt or not. And I choose me. So tell me about myself, predict me, and if you say I'm going to, I'm not, and if you're saying I'm not going to, I will. And this is exactly the same kind of thing. And so because of this, the halting problem, the computers cannot solve the halting problem. It's impossible to make this box here. There's no code, that, you know, it's impossible to make a program like that. And so that's what's been proved. And so basically this is summarizing, you know, the what I just said. And, you know, this is about the answer man. This slide shows, you know, the answer man is a hall tester and the contrary is a person who's singing. And so, you know, the salting problem is like the halting problem. And so it is possible to write a program that will test if and determine if some programs will stop. For example, you know, you can have a program that says, I'm going to run this software for 2 hours, and if it stops, I'm going to say it definitely will stop. If it doesn't stop, it might run forever, or it might stop at some point. So I can say, you know, I can write programs that will predict for some software, but not for everything. And so, again, we as people, we can see that, you know, look at this software, look at this piece of code and say, I definitely know this will stop. I can look at it and just, you know, predict it. If you're a computer, you can't really do that. And so, the halting problem is part of part of the problems that are uncomputable by computers. So, you know, they can't be solved by computers. And so, some people have said that because people can figure out, you know, whether some programs stop or they don't stop, and computers can't, you know, people are more intelligent than computers and will always be more powerful, or, you know, our brains are more powerful. And so this is another problem, though, that kind of challenges that thought. And so here's what the subroutine does. You know, you start with some x, say 22, and you repeat until x is smaller than 2. You say x, whatever. If the remainder, so if x is an even number, if the remainder of x divided by 2 is 0, you make x be x over 2. So you basically divide x by 2. If it's an odd number, you change x to be 3 times x plus 1. And I have the scratch code for that, and we'll see what happens. So, you know, is this program going to stop ever? If there's any number, for which numbers does this program halt? So again, if you have an even number, you're going to divide it by 2 and repeat this process. If you have an odd number, you're going to multiply it by 3 and add 1. So can you think of any? Smaller than 1.
test it if it's odd or even or odd. So I'm using the operator mod, which gives me the remainder. So if x mod 2 is 0, which means it's an even number, I basically set x to be x over 2. So we started with 22, right? It's going to stop for 22.
So again, when it's an even number, it divides it by 2. When it's an odd number, it multiplies it by 3 and adds 1. And so there's this... Okay, once it reaches a power of 2, it goes to 1 pretty fast. I think I
need a smaller...
You just need to tell
me. Sorry?
Even numbers, right? With odd numbers. Odd numbers take it to be very high. No, it doesn't work. I think it's smaller than...
It is?
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So it stopped for 22. Let's try something else. What's that?
When you say it stopped for 22,
you said
it stops for 22?
Yeah.
22 items, or?
22, if we start by setting x to... Yeah, for x's initial value of 22. Oh. So my question is, for which values of x, initial values of x, will this stop? Can we find out those values? And, you know, we can try something else. Let's try 1,000, for example. So that's what pretty much divides it in the beginning. You know, it makes it smaller because there's a lot of even numbers. And so we see how, you know, it goes down, it goes down, it goes down, but then it hits an odd number and it goes up again. And, you know, it's a very unpredictable, it's actually, nobody can tell. Like, this problem hasn't been solved, you know. There's not, you know, they're hoping to come up with just a set of numbers here. For these numbers, it's going to stop. For these numbers, it's not going to stop. But it's very hard to predict. And so it turns out this 3x plus 1 that we chose, if you make it 3x minus 1, it's very easy for it to go into a cycle. It's very easy to go into, a pattern. So we don't want that. You know, that's an easier problem. If it goes into a cycle, we can just say, well, it's never going to stop because, you know, it never reaches 1. But this one, it just generates numbers that are very unpredictable. And so... Yeah, it just keeps going up and down. And we don't really know if it's going to stop for 1,000. It might not stop, right? Okay. And so this is an example of a problem, you know, where, you know, computers obviously can't solve it. They don't know. We showed that a computer cannot tell if a program is going to stop. But, you know, people, too, can't tell if this program is going to stop. And so, you know, we can figure some problems out, but we can't figure other problems. I think it actually stops for 1,000, but it takes a while. You always want to stop it, but then you're thinking, oh, this is going to stop, and so I'm just going to let it run for a little while. Okay. All right. 4, 2, 1, stop. All right. So that stopped. And so we can't, the conclusion is that even as human beings, we can't really solve the halting problem ourselves. And so here's another very interesting a program that I'm going to show you. And this is a little weird. This program is going to, we're going to write a function, and it's going to make a copy of itself. And so here's how this problem works. It's a program, and it gets a text as input, and it outputs another text. And this is how it works. If there's any letter that are in the input, it just outputs exactly the text itself. When there are numbers, for the part that is just letters, it just outputs the letters. And then it gets to the numbers. For 2, it just adds a quotation mark. For 3, it copies the whole whole text to the output. And so, you know, because it encountered 3, it just like dumps the whole thing. And it basically glues it to whatever it has so far. For 4, it just puts it starts a new line. For 5, it moves the line a little bit by a tab. For 6 and 7, these are special characters using in computer programming. This means actually make a new line, make a new tab. And this is just another characters used in programming. And this can be used to make more complicated programs, but we're only going to use a few of the numbers, and you're going to see why. And so let's see. This is Python. This is a programming language, and this is what the code looks in Python. We can't write it in Scratch because Scratch is not as flexible. This says, you know, when I encounter 2, I just put a quotation mark. When I encounter 3, I just put the whole string, and so on. And so this is what we're going to do. We're gonna run this program. And what this means is that self-print is just when I receive self-print. And this is just a subroutine. And what it says is I'm going to print subr of this text. And this is going to, well, we're going to see what this is going to do. So here it is. This is our subroutine that we're running, and it basically says print subr of something. And so we're feeding to subr, we're feeding this text here. And so this is what goes into our subroutine. And so what does subr do? Well, we already said if there's text involved, we just output the text, right? We don't have any numbers here up to this point, so we just output that. Then we run into 4. And what this does is it puts a new line, right? It goes to a new line. When it goes to 5, it moves the line a little bit. Then it's text again. It just outputs the text here. And then it runs into 2. It puts a quotation mark. It runs into 3. It just dumps the whole, to the output. And it does the 2. It puts more quotation marks. And it puts the parentheses this one, and that's what it created. So what it basically outputs is exactly the subroutine that we started with. So that's a little weird. It's almost like it's giving birth to a copy of, you know, the program that we started with. And so it's kind of recursive in a very strange way, but it's not going infinitely. You know, it stops. It's just it's a very intelligent, clever use of substitution in variables. And so that's kind of a self referential program, right? And so, let's see. I'm not going to go over this, but, you know, we show that this running this thing actually prints out a copy of this. This running this thing will print a copy of the subroutine. And so I'm not going to go over that, but, you know, it looks kind of ugly, but it actually works. And so, you know, there's all kinds of quotes. you know, philosophers. We said that they like to talk about computer science, and they said that since computers can't solve the halting problems, we are smarter, which we, you know, in that area, it might not be true, because there's definitely problems that we can't tell if they stop or not. And there's also some kind of, you know, there's all kinds of discussions about, you know, the halting problems, and because the halting problems is not solvable, there's problems about the free will, you know, knowing everything and free will, and I'm not going to go into that. We, you know, philosophy is one area where I try to stay out of, because, you know, nobody's right, and there's not really, sometimes there's not conclusions that people reach. And so we're going to go into, we're done with a weird chapter where we're finished. One problem from this chapter that will be in the homework and on the exam is, I'm going to have a few examples, maybe later or next time, about, you know, looking at a problem, looking at a script and saying what values, for which values does the script stop or not. We're going to do plenty of those. But let's go into Huffman coding. And so here's the thing. Sometimes you have a text and you want to send it over to somebody else and you compress it. I don't know if you've used any kind of compressing software, WinZip or I don't know what else is out there. I use WinZip. So you're trying to make it smaller to be able to send, you know, less amount of, you know, smaller amount of bits, but you also don't want to lose any information. You don't want to compress it, and then at the other end, they won't be able to read it. And so there's two ways of you know, storing information. You can store it in a direct way, so, you know, text or, you know, your documents or whatever, and you can save it in a compressed way to save storage. And so, let's see. Today we're going to talk about Huffman coding. And so there's a Wikipedia web page that's pretty good. And so here's an example, right? This is the Gettysburg Address, and we want to, this is, you know, it's not a very long text. It's decent. It filled out a slide. But we want to make this, compress it into smaller, to being smaller, you know? And so what we're going to do is we're just going to count, we're going to say that, you know, the capitalized letters we're just going to make all the letters, you know, the same, like the capital letters are going to be, you know, small letters. And we are going to count how many of each we have. So we have space, and this is, I'm not sure what, oh, I think this is new line, bold. I don't know what this is. I don't think it's new line. Oh, maybe it's, I know what this is. This is new paragraph, I think. So we have 1, 2, 3, all right. And then we have all the other letters. We have, we have dashes, we have commas, we have, you know, question marks, and so on. And so we're counting all of these. And normally in the computer, you know, the format is 8 bits per character. This is how the characters are stored. And so, you know, because we have 1,482 characters, that's a total. It will take, you know, taking 8 bits per character, that will be 11,856 is the total number of bits that we need. And so this is just the uncompressed, you know, you have your file, this is how many bits you need. Now let's see if we can make this smaller and how we can actually, you know, use lesser amount of bits for. If we look at the Gettysburg Address, it's only 32 different characters. And so, you know, 8 bits, how many numbers can we represent with 8 bits? How many different characters can we represent with 8 bits? To the 8th, which is 256, right? And so we don't really need 256 characters. We only need 32. And so we only need 5 bits, right? 2 to the 5 is 32. And so we only need 5 bits per characters. And so multiply that by however many characters we have. That gives us 7,410 total bits, which is better. It's 62.5% of, you know, the uncompressed representation. And so, you know, we can just choose a random, you know, 5-bit code. For example, you know, the space will be this, and G will be this code, and Z will be this. Okay? This is just of I have the code that covers all the characters. And so we've compressed it a little bit. Let's see if there's some characters are more common than other characters. And so what if we did so we sort the characters according to, you know, the most frequent, the second most frequent, and so on. We give the four most common characters a 3-bit code, and the remaining 28 a 6-bit code. And so let's see how many bits we need now. So basically we're going to do, let's say that the first four, so this is, I think this is sorted by frequency. We actually only need the first four most frequent, and we give them these codes, and then the rest of them will have six-bit codes, right? And so basically we need three codes. So we have four here, but we only need 2 bits for four, right? We need 00011011. But we also need an extra bit that will say this code is for this code is going to be a 3-bit code. And so if it starts with a 0, it's going to be a 3-bit code. If it starts with a 1, it's going to be a 6-bit code. And so that's how we're going to know how to read it. And so, for example, if we get this test, we know that this is a 1. It starts with a 1, so it's going to be a 1. It's going to be a 6-bit code. So we're going to take all this, we're going to take all the 6 bits. And that's an H. And then the next one starts with a 1, 2, so that's going to be a 6-bit code. And we go 6 bits. The next one it starts with a 0. We're going to know that's a 3-bit code, and that is a space. Another 3-bit code, and that's a T. Another 6-bit code, H, 3-bit code, and so on. And this makes it very easy to decode. This is how many characters we have. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Right, so we have 9 characters, and this took 42 bits. If we use the 5-bit code, that's going to give us 9 times 5, 45 bits for the 5-bit code. And so we did, we do a little better. It's a little harder to work with because, you know, when you decode it, you have to go through and say, is this going to be a 3-bit code or is this going to be a 6-bit code? And so it's a little harder to work with. But it's weird, right? Because we have 32 characters and only 4 have 3-bit codes. And the rest of them have 6-bit codes. And so it seems like it would have to be... most of the characters have actually been longer. And so how come that change helped? We actually made it smaller, but we actually added bits to most of them, right? Any ideas? Go ahead.
Because in most text documents, the characters for space, E, T, and A outnumber everything else put together easily.
Yeah. So because the 3-bit codes are so, the letters are so frequent, they totally take over everything else. And so it doesn't matter, you know, we added 1 bit for each of the rest of them, but that adding doesn't make up how much space we save for the 3-bit codes. And notice that we save 2 bits. So we had 5 bits. We saved 2 bits for the most frequent ones, and we just added 1 bit for the less frequent ones. And so, so here it is. How do we add up the bits? Well, you know, if we know that there's 10 Ys, and each Y is 6 bits, we're going to have 60 bits for all the Ys. And Ts, we have 126. Each is 3 bits, so it's going to be, 378 bits for all the T's, and it was 630. So that's a big saving. And so, you know, this is a formula that helps us, you know, how do we count all the number of bits, the total number of bits? Well, we sum up, so we take each letter, how many letters do we have? We have 10 Y's, multiply that by how many bits we need for the Y. So for the Y's, we have 10, 6 bits for each. 6 times 10 is going to be 60. And we add that, and we do that for all the characters. And we're going to see examples of that soon. And so, summing it all up, we know that these four need three characters, so we're going to have, you know, 282 times three, all the bits that we need for all the spaces. You know, we're going to have 165 times three for all the E's, 126 times three for all the T's, and so on. And we end with, we have zero Z's and zero X's, and so on. So that is how we count how many bits we need for the, as the total. And so for this approach, we will need, we got to 57.9% of the initial 8-bit you know, coding, which is pretty good. We're getting to half of it. And so we started with this number, and now we have this number. And so that's pretty good. Okay, and so we can think of other ways, right? We can say we're just going to sort them according to frequency, and we're going to assign a 1-bit code for the most frequent, a 2-bit code for the second frequent, second most frequent, and so on. And so that gives us, that's not very good, it just gives us 88.3%. So it's still better than the first one. Okay, so what is, any other ways to make things smaller they can think of? Okay, maybe I give them all. I took all your ideas, and I already talked about them. No? Okay. So here's the, you know, this has been, you know, people have been thinking a lot about this. And Shannon actually invented, invented the theory of information and bits, and we talked about him a little bit. And Fano and Shannon were working together at this problem. How can we make an optimal, you know, an encoding that, you know, you can't do better than that? And they're really, you know, brainstorming about it. And Fano actually had a class, and he assigned this problem in class. He didn't tell the students that, you know, this problem hasn't been solved yet. And so Hoffman was in his class, and he solved it. He didn't know that, you know, his teacher, he thought it was just a homework problem. And he solved it, and he actually proved that you actually can't do better than that. And so he came up with this encoding, and we're going to see what it is. And so here, here's what it is. We're going to end up building this tree. And the codes are very, say we have this tree, this is our encoding. The way we find the codes is we start at the root of the tree, and say we want the code for E. We are just going to go down the tree and remember which direction we went. And so first, going from here to E, we need to take this branch, take the left branch, which is a 0. We're going to write 0. Then to get to E, we need to take this branch, which is going to be another 0, so 0, 0, and then we need to take a right branch, which is going to be a 1. And so the code for E, given this tree, will be 0, 0, 1. And so given the tree, the way you find the code is just you go down the tree, starting from the root, and you take left branch or right branch, and that gets you to whatever character you want to find. And so, you know, what would be the code for X? For example. Anybody? Yeah. Yeah.
0, 0, 0.
For X?
Oh, X.
Yeah. Okay, so 1, 1, 1.
Oh, 0, 1, 0.
Yes, exactly. All right, so, okay. Try another one. Which one were you doing?
Oh, I thought you said S.
S. Okay, so, S is hard too, right? So it's, I don't even know where I need to go. This way, right?
Oh, so space.
Ah, okay. Yes, S, this space is 0, 0, 0. Yes, exactly, okay. And so notice that the, you know, S, E, and T, and A have small codes. They're going to have, they all have 3-bit codes in here. And stuff that is less frequent will have longer codes. And, you know, we're going to see how that works out. And so, you know, given the tree now, we know how to get the code for each letter. The problem is, how do we get this tree? It's a really, really good tree. And, you know, it's actually the best tree at this job. And so, okay, so, yeah, so this is what I said before. Given the, so given the tree, we can easily find the path. This is the path for W. It's going to be 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1. All right. Okay, so so what we're going to do, this is just a, you know, to give you some kind of, you know, thing written out. But I'm going to show you an example. And this is part of the tree. And so say we have a word, and we write down all the characters in the word, or all the characters in the text. And we count how many of each there are in the text. And so, for example, there's going to be 21 U's in our text, and so on. And then what we're going to do is we're going to choose the two less frequent ones. So in this case, one Q is a less, you know, it's only has a frequency of 1, and K only has a frequency of 3. So they're the smallest frequencies. If there's equal frequencies, if you have to choose, if this was a 3, it doesn't matter which one you choose. And so let's just choose. In this case, we're going to choose Q and K. And we're going to make a little subtree. And we're going to write, you probably can't see, but there's a little 4 written, which is the sum of, so this subtree of group K and Q together, and the frequency is going to be the sum of the two frequencies that we have under. And so then we choose, and then we're going to treat this tree as a separate character, as a separate entity. And so this entity will have a frequency 4. And we continue doing this. So we're going to choose the two smallest frequencies, which in this case are this 4 and this 4, right? And so we're going to group them together. And we're going to make another tree, which is, or subtree, which is, has frequency of 8. And now the smallest frequencies are this 8 and one of these 10s. And it really doesn't matter. You can choose any of them. In this case, you know, things are switched around so that the tree looks prettier. But so we have this tree here, and this is that. And we grouped it with Y, which was one of the 10s. And we made an 18. And so we keep moving. Having 18 here, it's bigger than 13, and it's bigger than 10. And so the smallest frequencies at this point are going to be 13 and 14. So we make a tree out of that. That's going to be 23. Then the next one is going to be 15 and 14, or this 15, it doesn't matter. And so we continue doing that. And this is, you know, part of the big tree that, you know, you saw before. And the whole tree is this. And you're never going to get anything like this in your homework or anything. But, you know, this is to show that the whole, you know, Gettysburg Address tree, that's the tree for it. And so you can see that, for example, the code for space, what is the code for space now? This actually, like, is glued right here, but it didn't fit. It's 1, 1. Yes, exactly. So now it has a 2-bit code. What about for, okay, what about for N? Okay, so N is right here. So it's zeros all the way down, right? It's 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 5, 0. All right. So this is, now we have, after we do the, we make the tree, we write down all the codes for all the letters. And now we can actually know, knowing the frequencies, we can actually compute how many bits, what's the total number of bits that we need for the whole text. And so, you know, we know that S needs 2 bits, and we're going to multiply that by however many times the space, I'm sorry. The space needs 2 bits, we're going to multiply that by how many spaces there are, and so on. And, you know, notice K is a really large 10-bit code, but K only shows up a few times, and so it doesn't really matter that it's such a big code. And so, in this example, we have 4.1 bits per character, which is The best that we can do, it turns out, it's 51.7 of the size of the original code, and it's actually minimal. And Huffman actually showed that you can't do better than that. There's no other character by character. So, you know, there's no other compression that is, you know, take one character, find a code. There's other compressions that are better, but the character by character is, that's the best one. And so, you know, I made an example for Mississippi. If you have Mississippi, you just write down all the letters, and then you count how many of each letter there are. So you have one M, you have four I's, two P's, and four S's. And so when you do that, you're going to take the two the smallest ones, which are M and P, one and two, make a tree of that. That tree has a frequency 3, and now you have the smallest frequencies are 3 and one of the 4s. For example, this one, they make a tree that has frequency 7, and then you group that with S, and that's a frequency 10. And then you you have, you know, these are the codes. It's 0,0,0 for M, 0,0,1 for P, 0,1 for I, and S has a 1-bit code in this case. And so how many bits, what's the total number of bits that we need to compress Mississippi? Because you have one M and you need 3 bits for M, 0,0,0. You have, so add that to, so it's 3. You have 4 I's and you need how many bits for each I? Each I is 0,1, so you need 2 bits for each I, so that's 8. Then you have 2 P's and each P has 3 bits, 0,0,1, so that's 6. And then you have 4 S's, 1 bit for each S, 4. And that adds up to 20. Okay, great. Okay, so there's other kinds of codes. There's, you know, detecting errors. So sometimes when you send something on a network, there's all kinds of noises that can interfere with the signal, and you want to know if something has been changed. You have error correcting, which shows you not just that something has gone wrong, but also that it shows you which of the bits has been changed. And anybody can think of any example of that when we have, we know exactly which bit has been changed, or some, we've done something like this, one of these a long time ago. The barcodes, so the barcodes had the check digit, right? And that digit was saying, you know, if some, you know, it was a double checking that everything is right. And so, so there's also video compression. Not gonna look at that. And also there's encryption. And encryption says when I send information between two computers, I need to encrypt it. I need to make it secret so that, you know, somebody can't go, you know, look and at what I'm sending and actually, you know, read it or, you know, be able to get into my bank account and so on. And so I would like to do another example of, let's see, maybe we should try this first. So here's an example of a question for the halting problem. You have, this is going to be on the homework and on the exam too. So here's this code and it says set count to ? So we're going to have to find values of ? In here. And it says, repeat until count is smaller than 20. It plays sound, pop, and wait. And then change count by minus 1. And so the question is, for what values of ? Does the script stop, halt, right? And so you have all these. Let's try this, actually. Let's see. So your options are A, all values, it always halts. B, no values, it always loops forever. C, all numbers smaller than 20. D, all numbers larger than 20. And E, all integers larger or equal to 20. It doesn't matter where.
Does it matter?
Doesn't matter if it goes into the loop. If it doesn't go into the loop, that counts as holding. All
right.
So for numbers that don't even go into the loop, those are good numbers. Okay? Okay, I'm going to stop at 145.
Stop.
Yeah. Okay, getting ready to stop. Alright, C was all numbers smaller than 20. Alright, let's see what happens. So the way I do these problems is I look at this condition here. And I say, okay, count is smaller than 20. Let's see what happens for numbers that are bigger than 20 and what happens for numbers that are smaller than 20. And so let's say count is 21. Which is definitely bigger than 20. It says repeat until count is smaller than 20, which it definitely will do. Play sound pop, change count by minus 1. It makes it 20. And it says repeat until count is smaller than 20. It's not smaller than 20. Play sound pop, change count by minus 1. Makes it 19. Repeat until count is smaller than 20. It is smaller than 20. It stops. And so you can see how I usually take a number that is a little bigger than 20 because if I take a number that's too high, this is going to take too long. And so you can see how for all numbers that are larger than 20, it will go into the loop, but it will make the count smaller and smaller and smaller, and eventually it will stop, right? Because it will reach 20, okay? So those numbers, for those numbers, it stops. What about for numbers that are smaller than 20? What if it starts at 19? Well, if it starts at 19, it doesn't even go into the loop, and so it stops right away. It says repeat until count is smaller than 20. It is, so it's stopping. Okay, so it works for those numbers. It works for if a number is you know a decimal number. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It's gonna end up in here. So the answer is all numbers. B. All values. And, you know, this was a good answer because it definitely stops for all numbers that are smaller than 20, but it's not the biggest set of numbers that you can think of, okay? And so, does this make sense? Any questions about this? Try a different one? Sure. So, does C make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Then if it's bigger, so I took 21, what it's doing, whenever it's going in through this loop one time, it's making a count one smaller.
So eventually.
And the question is, eventually is a key word. So for what values of question mark, the scratch script always eventually calls. So let's try another one. This one is the same. It changes. This changed to be bigger than 20 instead of smaller than 20. And so it sets count to question mark. Repeat until count is larger than 20. Play sound pop and wait and change count by minus 1. And the question is the same question. And I think the options are the same options. For all values, A. For no values, B. C. For all numbers smaller than 20. D. All numbers larger than 20. And E. All integers larger or equal to 20. Stop at 1:45. What happens for, again, what happens for numbers that are larger than 20? So what happens is that, you know, say count starts by being 25 or 21. Repeat until count is larger than 20. It is, so it stops for all numbers that are bigger than 20. When a number is smaller than 20, what happens is that, say 19. Repeats until count is bigger than 20. It's not, it goes, it stops. And it changes count by minus 1, it makes it 18. It says, repeat until count is larger than 20, it's still not larger than 20. It changes it by minus 1, it makes it 17. Yeah.
But how do you, what do you start the count at? Set count to what?
That's the question.
But, you know, isn't it that where you've been like set count to 1, and then repeat until, you know, whatever? So wouldn't it start at 1 and then continue? Would it not start at 1 and then keep playing?
So are you asking what happens when question mark is 1? Because the question is, find these values for which the script will stop.
Okay.
So that's why this is hard. Because you have to think of all the numbers and what happens to all the numbers. And again, I say, you know, the way I think of it is, you know, what if this is a key condition, right? This determines if, you know, this is going to stop or it's not going to stop. And so that's why I look at around this value, what happens for numbers that are bigger, what happens for numbers that are smaller, and whatever happens to all the numbers that are bigger is going to, you know, what happens for one is going to happen to all of them, right? Like if I choose 25, this is never going to go into the loop. This condition is met. If it's smaller, what's going to happen is this is not going to be met, and it's going to keep making count smaller and smaller and smaller, getting further and further away from being able to meet the condition. And so that's that. So, any other questions? This is the third question and the last one. What changed here is count becomes equal to 20. So, repeat until count is equal to 20. And again, play sound pop, change count by minus 1. And I think the options are the same. Thank you. 30. Stopping. Yay. Okay. Right. So the key here was that if we want it to be exactly equal to 20, we definitely need integers. Anything that's not an integer will skip over it, right? So let's see. What happens for numbers that are smaller? Well, numbers that are smaller, it's definitely not going to stop because it keeps subtracting 1 from it, and so it's going to get further and further away from 20. It's not going to be able to be equal to 20 ever. If it's bigger than 20, if it's 30, what's going to do? It's going to subtract 1 until it reaches 20. And so that's a good thing. But if it's 20.5, it's not equal to 20. When it's subtracting 1, it's going to be 19.5. And then 18.5, and it goes into that, So the right answer is integers, all integers larger or equal to 20. Okay, and this is usually the case when there's an equal here. And the last thing I would like to do today is go over another example of the Huffman curve. For those of you who want to stay, which I would appreciate. I will do remorselessness. And this will be exactly how you should do it on the homework and on the exam. So what I do is I write all the letters and how many times they show up. So R shows up how many times?
Twice.
E shows up 4 times. M?
Once.
O?
Once.
And S?
5.
L? 1. And N? 1. All right. And what I do is I write them all down. I say, well, I've written them in a way that makes my tree pretty. And so I'm saying L, N, O, M, R, and L, and S. No, E, and S. And so I put the frequencies usually, this is how I do it. I put them underneath. And so L and N and O and M have 1. And then R has 2, E has 4, and S has 5. And then what I do is I start with the 2 smallest frequencies, which are which letters?
L and M.
L and M, for example. It could be any of these. I could combine these two, I could combine these two, it doesn't matter. You're going to get different trees, but the problem is getting the smallest amount of bits for the whole thing. And so that's not going to make a difference. So I'm grouping these two. I'm calling this a 2 because 1 and 1 is 2. So the sum of the frequencies. What about the next 2? Like the smallest 2, basically. So far. O and M. Another 2. What about now? It's not always the case. It can be either the case that one of these combined with, so one of the ones that haven't been combined is going to be combined with a tree, or it just, the important thing is the smallest frequencies all the time. So always choose the 2 smallest frequencies. So now we have a 2, we have a 2, we have a 2, and a 4 and 5. So we can choose, okay, we're going to choose, let's see, did I do that? I don't think it's going to matter. So let's combine these. 2. We're going to make this a 4. Now, what do we have? We have, say, these two. So we have a 2. We have 2 4s and a 5. So we're going to choose 2 and 1 of 4s. I'm going to choose these. This is a 6. Now, the 2 smallest are, that was the reason why I'm going to move this S here. Okay, and I'm going to have the 5 and the 4. And then I'm going to have, this is going to be 5 plus 4, 9. And then I'm going to have the 6 and the 9. And that will be a 15. And notice that the value on top at the root is exactly how many letters I have in the in my word. Because I write down all the frequencies here, and then I add them up, and then they add up to exactly how many letters there are in it. So now we need to write down the codes for each letter. So let's see, what's the code for R? Letter? 1, 0. 1, 0. What's the code for E? 1, 1. The code for M is 0, 1, 1, 1. The code for O? 0, 1, 0. The code for S? 0, 0, 0, 0. The code for L? 0, 1, 0, 0. And the code for N? 0, 1, 0, 1. Okay? And so I might ask, at this point I might ask, what is the total code for remorselessness? And you can just write, okay, the R is going to be, so we have, we're going to replace R by the code for R, which is 1, 0. The code for E is 1, 1. The code for M is 0, 1, 1, 1. The code for O is 0, 1, 1, 0. The code for R is 1, 0. The code for S is 0, 0. E, 1, 1. S again, 0, 0. S again, 0, 0. N, 0, 1, 0, 1, and E again, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0. So that is our encoding for remorselessness, okay? And how many bits is that? We can either count these. The easier way, I think, is just how many R's are there? There's two R's, and each needs 2 bits. So for R, we have 2 times 2, right? 2 R's and 2 bits for each R. For E, we have 4 E's and we need 2 bits for each E, so it's 4 times 2. M is, there's 1 M, 4 bits for the M. There's 1 O with 4 bits. There's 5 S's with 2 bits each. 1 L, 4 bits. 1 N, 4 bits, and add them all up, and that will give you how many bits you need to encode this word. And you can also do stuff like, you know, compare that to 8 bits per character, and that's 90 bits for the uncompressed, and then you can count how many bits you need for the compressed. And that's it.